Hey everybody, welcome to another week's episode of the Ricky Watson Show, and I am excited about this week's episode. Today we're going to have my first guest on the show, and I think you are going to be inspired, you're going to learn some things, you're going to be motivated, and I cannot wait for you to listen. I had the honor and the privilege to interview my brother, my friend, Nick Hulbert, and I think you are in for a good ride. This one interview turned into two episodes. So let's go ahead and get ready for part one. Alrighty, guys, I am so excited about having my brother, Nick Hulbert, on the podcast with me today. Guys, we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn so much. I'm going to just be a student the whole time. This is going to be great. It really is. This guy is a true definition of a quiet storm. I believe he is a wealth of wisdom, a wealth of power as well. And I feel like he is one of those people that if you can take a moment, ask him some questions, just sit and listen to him, just listen, let that brain start vocalizing itself, you're going to be blessed. You're going to be blessed for sure. So I'm excited about the conversation we're going to have today. Nick is somebody that I truly honor, I truly respect. I have a great appreciation for everything that I've seen this man do. And his commitment to himself and his commitment to what he feels like is the task at hand is admirable. So that's why I have him with me today. And so we just gonna plow into some stuff, let him talk, share his heart, and then I'll let him go. And then we'll see. We'll see what happens. But Nick, welcome to the show. Glad to have you here, brother.
Man, I'm glad to be here. I'm very excited for this podcast, everything that you'll be putting into it, everything that'll come from it. And I'm excited to be one of the first guests.
Right. I mean, you literally are the first guest on the show. So that's really dope.
When you get big and stuff, I can just say, oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you got big time.
You know, and vice versa. I'm be like, y'all know my little show, I had Nick Hulbert on the show. Okay, man, let's jump in here, because I'm telling you, y'all are really, I'm expecting you guys to be inspired, encouraged, motivated, gain new insight by the end of this. So let's jump in. Nick, you are somebody that I really do admire. I have to say that I really do admire. And what I've seen and watched, even from a distance, I really do. And so I say all of that to say that even this first question that I'm about to ask, it is because I really do respect your mind, how you think, how you process things. And so I'm really looking forward to it. So my first question out the gate is, how can somebody navigate societal expectations and stereotypes as a Black man in America while reaching for growing in self-love?
I should have known you was going to come with these very thoughtful questions.
You know?
What could I say? I think a big part of that when we're speaking about self-love is identity. It's very simple or probably cliche, but I really strongly believe knowing who you are for yourself and not necessarily what every other aspect of life has told you you are pretty much gives you a better sense of actually loving self. And this response could be different for different people because, of course, it depends on people's upbringing, their backgrounds, whatever trauma they may have experienced, whatever, all of those things that could have shaped how they see themselves, whatever their perception of themselves is. Mm-hmm. But I really feel that knowing who you are as far as identity, it also teaches you what you are not. So societal expectations and stereotypes, all of these other things are basically just a group of other people's opinions for who they want you to be or how they want you to show up. That's really all stereotypes is. So when the world throws these different expectations of you to you, knowing who you are, you're able to look at that and say, oh, that's actually what I'm not. And know for yourself these things that may be normal to everybody else. If that don't feel good to you, you're able to look at it and say, hey, I know who I am. I'm confident in who I am. That's not who I am, or that's not what I like. And it's not necessarily to say that whatever that is wrong to in the eyes of whoever else. It's just you know who you are. So in gaining the self-love, of course, that emanates from who you know you are. And yeah, I really just think it's a identity thing, knowing who you are, who you're becoming, and not necessarily conforming to whatever other opinion that the world creates for you.
Wow, now that's actually so good. I want to go back to, actually, I want to take several steps back. But before I do that, sure. I want them not to miss the line on how important is it to know who you're not. You know, everybody's in search of who they are, learning to love who they are, learning all of that, which is good. But I also think it's equally important to know who you're not. Talk about that.
100%. Let's give an example. The world may say a man must be one who doesn't cry, who's strong, hold all these things on his back. He has to be tough. Nothing can break him, all of these things. But I may be a guy that didn't necessarily grow up in a household where I had to be that, or I didn't really have situations in my life that made me that. I may be a soft man. I'm a soft guy. I'm emotional. None of those things are bad. That's who you are. You step out into that. You love that part of yourself. And that's what it is. So when the world does come at you and say, hey, you're not supposed to cry, Nick, because you know who you are and you don't feel you have to be that man. I think the struggle a lot of times with men is the feeling that they have to be that man because of the stereotypes and expectations that the world automatically, like once you're born into this world, especially as a Black man, they've already planned your life out in their head.
Absolutely.
So depending on how you taught, like I said, it depends on your upbringing, because someone who was affirmed a lot when they were a child, they may struggle a lot less with accepting the person that they are, the difference that they may have, whatever uniqueness they have about themselves. Being affirmed in that as a child and growing up in that affirmation makes you a lot stronger and more confident in saying no to what you are not. It's easier to say, hey, no, I'm not that big, strong, tough guy. Yeah, I do cry sometimes. I'm a soft guy. I like to chill. I like to express myself. That's just who I am. And I don't have to be that. And I can be a lot more comfortable. I don't have to conform to what may be normal for everybody else, because I know it's not who I am. So, I think that's the basis of it anyway. It could possibly go deep.
No, that's so good. Now, you've referenced a couple of times actually already about how important your upbringing is and how you were raised. Talk to us about your upbringing. Give us some insight into what that was like.
My upbringing was, I think I made a complete transformation. my upbringing was household, mother and father, but father was tough guy, man, old school, kind of like a lot of old school. You just think about your grandfather who grew up in the old times, had it hard in life, so he kind of just adjusted to that. He probably didn't have the household where he can express himself emotionally. There was no I love yous and hugs and affection and all of these things. It was just kind of like, be this stoic person, nothing affect you, you're strong, nobody crying, all of that make you soft. Right. Like that was my upbringing. So
pick yourself back up.
Right. But for a long time for me, I think I always had deep within me this desire to just be able to express myself and be affectionate. But because I didn't have the space for it growing up, a lot of times it was difficult, and that played a role in multiple aspects of my life, whether career, school, my relationships, intimate and just regular platonic friendship relationship. In a way, I showed up as a damaged form of me. Thank God for wisdom and just being exposed to other aspects of life to see that it was okay to cry to this point. When I turned 23, I just start crying for no reason. I used to be
that's
like,
wild.
I was like, this is not how I was raised. I'm supposed to be hard, all this other stuff. But Yeah, 23, it was just like random. I just started, everything was making me emotional. Everything I was going through, I was emotional. I was crying. I was like, man. So eventually getting more comfort in that space and also being around people who allow those emotions to flourish in their own way and just made it safe for me to do so, to where I didn't have that thought in the back of my mind that I'm doing something wrong by expressing myself. Getting in those environments kind of created spaces for me to release what I had been holding in for a long time. So now I can be watching the Disney. I was watching what is it called?
Not Disney.
Encanto, I think that's what it's called. And I'm sitting there like, she ain't get her gift. All these other kids running.
Oh man. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
that's really real. Now you said 23, like you start crying about stuff, emotion. That is a 23, as young as it sounds, that's still a lot of years to be groomed a certain way to then
definitely
get to a place of learning to be comfortable with your emotions. Like, was it just a birthday that kind of turn some things on for you? What was it, a moment? What happened to make you say, I don't understand this, but this is who I am?
What was it? I think it happened in so many times. Another difficult thing with me growing up was everybody around me had the same experience. Like all of my close friends at the time, I had one friend that literally allowed me to be affectionate, but all of my other friend circle, at like everybody I was around, even at school, everybody just kind of had that same mentality. So I felt like I had to fit into that, and a part of me, it's there. I am that in a way, but I think it was just multiple things happening at once.
Yeah.
From what I can remember, it was this breakdown that I had, and then
oh wow,
it was I'm gonna go ahead and put my business out there. So
I mean, I've been just about to turn into an Oprah episode in a minute. Go for it.
Well, yeah. So this is just an example of a breakdown I had. Example of a moment where I didn't necessarily have the opportunity. I had the opportunity in this moment because I had no one around me to tell me not to. So this is 23. I think I was closing out undergrad or still in. I had moved away from home, whatever. So not around the normal upbringing that made me into that fake, strong Terminator guy. But in this moment, I was going through a breakup and my girlfriend at the time ripped up this little card that we had with like pictures on it. Now, normally who I was, stuff like that wouldn't really affect me. It was just like, oh, that's cute, whatever. I'm doing it for the woman, whatever. But in this moment, I don't even know if I really cared about the card, but just seeing the card ripped up, it just kind of did something in me and I just had like a breakdown.
Dang.
I remember just sitting on the couch and I was like, dang, why I've been crying so much? I just been crying for no reason. I was at work one at like around the same time, walked outside, a little flustered, just started crying on the phone. And I was like, man, I don't know what this is, but.
Right.
I think like after having a lot of moments to where it got separating me from what I felt like I had to be before, kind of gave me the space to just say, oh, I can cry and still, like, I'm fine. I'm still a man. I still feel like myself. I actually feel better because I was able to let that out. So having a lot of those moments and being able to affirm myself in those moments, I believe for me is what kind of made me a lot more comfortable with identity that just kind of revealed to me, like, this is who you are and it doesn't change anything. This is just something that you wasn't able to release before. So it feels new now, but that's because you hid it for so long.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. So it's not even really, if I'm hearing you right, you're saying it's not even when you're learning yourself and learning to love yourself, you're not discovering new things. You're rediscovering old things.
Discovering old things or things that you actually never experienced before.
I love that.
That new environments may teach you or reveal to you.
Wow. Every time you say something, I have like 10 questions in my head. that's so good though. How was it sometimes, especially for a Black boy growing up, you know, teenage years is one thing. Then you have those college years. That's another thing. it can feel like as you are transforming and growing into the adult and the man that you have grown into, there could be a period where you feel like it is two of you. It's one person that you used to know and one person that you were getting to know. How is that? How do you deal with that process without losing your mind?
Man, when I tell you I literally just made 31 and I still have those moments where I'm like learning something that feels new, but I have to kind of dig a little deeper and see if that's something that's been there. Is it something new that happened to me that it exposed this? Or like, I have so many of those moments all the way up until now, but I honestly think for me, it really was seclusion. I think God was very intentional with, and when I say seclusion, I don't mean like me shutting everybody off and just being in this hole by myself, not wanting to be around people. I don't mean in that way, but He's very strategic in taking me away from certain people at certain times and putting me around certain people at certain times, and also having me alone at certain times. A lot of my alone years were very strategic by God. But I say that to say, growing up as a young boy, if you say elementary into middle school or middle school into high school, of course, all of us around those years, very curious. We want to know about everything. Whether we announce it or not, it's always these thoughts in our head, like, what is this? What is that?
Right.
So I think having that curiosity in my alone time just was a lot of space for me to just kind of analyze. I'm very highly critical of myself, and I literally feel like I've been like that since I was like elementary school. Like, I had moments 12 years old when I would just be sitting there thinking like, did I do that right? Was I right? Did this? How did I show up right here? Like, I've always been that person for myself.
Wow.
I think when I say God was strategic with putting me alone, because of that skill or tool or whatever you want to call self-evaluation, because that was so strong in me, in these alone moments, I was able to just sit and compare everything that was around me, like, or analyze everything that was around me. Like, my dad, if I'm 12 years old and I realize he don't really want me to sit in the house under my mom or play with my toys or do whatever like that, he just, you need to go outside, you need to go get a job, all this other stuff. It's just real. My daddy was real old school, but being able to analyze those moments and be like, why is he like that at very, like a very young age, and then compare that to who I am, and then to say, oh, my dad didn't have his mom. His mom died when he was 2. Dad died when he was 16. He was on his own for however many years, just kind of moving around in life, learning whatever he learned and whatever way he learned, no guidance, et cetera. But being able to do that at a young age, to where I'm in this space where I'm by myself. I was the youngest child also, so all of my siblings would be like out of the house by this time. I have nothing to just be by myself.
Got you. I don't think I knew that, but okay.
Yeah. My closest brother is 6 years older than me, so there was a period where everybody was out of the house, and I still had a lot of teenage and young adult years to grow alone. But yeah, all of these moments, I think I was just able to analyze all these different things. This is what he didn't have. This is what I do have. So do I actually have to be like this? Did his upbringing just cause him to be that way? So in a way, it taught me how to accept him and who he was, but also taught me who I was and who I wasn't.
Oh, wow. Wait a minute. Okay. Learning that helped you see or understand him, why he was the way he was, but it also, how did that help you see something about you?
So because I, in a way, I was able to channel where his pain came from. Like, I was able to, I don't know what it was, but I was able to just kind of analyze him, his lifestyle, notice that it was from a place of pain. Even if he would have a talk with me and say, hey, son, this is what my life was. I never had this, that. Just hearing how he expressed certain things showed me pain. So being able to apply that pain to a lot of his other reactions and responses to certain things, and him being a mean person at times, or him being closed off, not really expressive, not really I love you, let me hug you, son. Like that, all of that literally didn't start until probably around the same time when I was 23. I started to force him to say, I love you. Like if we're getting off the phone, I'd be like, I love you, pops, just so he can get used to it.
Right.
Like I had to do that to kind of open him up to it. But at a younger age, noticing the only reason he wasn't like that is because he didn't have a mother to hug him. He didn't have his father. He had his father up until a teenager. But of course, it's a lot of life after teenage years. Other stuff he expressed to me just kind of presented, oh, you wasn't really accepted. So all of these things that I'm sitting in these younger years, just kind of analyzing, like picking this stuff apart and applying it to my life. Like I have both parents here. He may not be as affectionate, but he still shows up for me. My mother here is super affectionate. I got family, brothers around me that they loving. Like I don't, that's not really my lifestyle, my upbringing. So maybe it is okay for me to be who I am. Like I don't have to be that. You are only that because of, that's another thing. Being able to see some of his soft moments that he may not really want to express. Like if we go to a funeral, so to say, and I see him cry because he lost a brother. It's like, oh, you actually do have feelings. You're not just closed off. You feel something.
Yeah.
Maybe you just don't like to let it out or don't know how or don't have the space to, but you actually feel something because you're crying right now. So
right.
I know there's a soft side in you somewhere, but this is what my mind does consistently. I'm just kind of like, you know, the little calculation meme when you got putting all these pieces together, basically just kind of helped me analyze him, and not just him. It's multiple people from that point. He's just a great example, but being able to see that and just kind of analyze what makes him who he is, like that identity piece, like why are you like that? And then noticing that he may have not had the resources around him to be able to actually identify himself like I do when I go off to college and see all of these other families are, when I'm playing sports and see these other families are, when I'm around people in ministry, because my dad didn't grow up in church, and I'm able to see these different aspects of love given in the church world, different stuff like that I'm exposed to kind of reveal more to me of like seeing what's for me and what's not. Do I like that? I actually like that. That's pretty cool. My dad probably never had the opportunity to even be around any of this. So he kind of just grew up in whatever life just trained him. Whatever that life was is who he became. There's certain tools around him that he didn't have. So just being able to have these moments alone and legit just analyze every little aspect of my life from feet to the top of my head pretty much is how I don't even remember what the question was. I just went on.
And this is good. And I'm like, dang, now I got another question connected to this. And then I got a pivot. And I'm looking at this time like, wow, this clock is moving. Well, hey, I promise y'all, this interview is really just getting started. There are tons of other things that we're going to cover. And again, I don't even know if me and Nick got past my first question for him. But the interview is amazing. I hope you guys are learning something, being encouraged by something, being motivated by something. Again, that is my intent behind this show, is that I want to turn the light on in your minds and in your hearts regarding the fact that everything in your life is trying to teach you something, whether it's people, circumstances, your job, your relationships, wherever you find yourself in life, it is trying to teach you something. Today has a lesson to teach you. And so I want us to posture our hearts and our minds that way. And I want you to learn something. So if you thought you missed something in the past 20 minutes, go back and listen to this again, because I'm telling you, there are things to learn, to grab, that can change the way you think and set your life up for the future that you want. I'm telling you guys, you want to be here next week for part two of this episode. We're going to get into some good stuff. We're going to talk about forgiveness, what it looks like practically. And we kind of stumbled into that, but it was amazing. I want to wish all of my listeners a happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We are honored to stand on the shoulders of this man. And so I hope you take the time today to reflect on the fact that who you are today, where you are today, and what you have access to in today's world is because of people like Martin Luther King Jr. So let's honor each other, let's love each other, and let's keep pressing forward to the future. I'll see you all same time, same place next week. God bless. We'll be right back.